copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I'm going to be talking, obviously, about marriage. And part of this comes out of doing quite a lot of counseling of people with broken marriages and with struggling with sexuality, and knowing that we all do. Our fallen sexuality is a complex part of who we are as human beings. But a few basic principles right at the beginning here. I think the scripture speaks, as it speaks of marriage, of mutuality in a number of different areas. And I said in the last presentation that Paul was speaking here to a culture where there was a distinct lack of mutuality, where men dominated women, had ownership of their bodies. So it's a radically different story that he's telling. There is a mutuality in terms of faithfulness to each other, of responsibility for each other's bodies and sexuality, of mutual ownership, a mutual consent to abstain from sex for a time that Paul talks about for whatever reason, but a realism, don't do that for too long, because one or other of you may be tempted then to go outside marriage, to pornography, to adultery, or whatever it may be. And then the broad heading that Paul speaks about in Ephesians of submission, and submission of mutual submission. Paul is speaking about submitting to one another, and then he teaches them about how women submit to men, men submit to women, husbands to wives, wives to husbands, children to parents, slaves to masters, and so on. So all this is a sort of underlying framework then. And now we are working against so much in terms of the areas of brokenness that I outlined in my first section last night. All that the areas of fallenness in culture. These slides will be available on the recording of this. So don't try and write it all down now, because I'll be going too fast for you. But one of these, of course, is the pull of pornography. And as we've been saying, real relationships are difficult. They're tough. They're complex. So it's much easier when you are feeling frustrated and bored and unhappy to slip into seeking self-fulfillment, your little fix of pleasure, because fantasy is a whole lot easier than reality, and you're in control. Whereas in a relationship where you may have to spend the whole day and your whole life romancing someone else, getting to know them, spending time with them, talking with them, that's a whole lot more complex and time-consuming. So in all these areas and confusion about sexual identity and sexual orientation, we run up against these problems when we're helping people in the church, in counseling, with problems within their marriages. Now, I said earlier that the Song of Songs, in a way, is a sort of lesson in lovemaking. And I want to say a little bit more, because I think it gives us a window into the heart of God, of what good sex, what we're longing for. Now, we'll never get back pre-fall, because we're living in a fallen world, so it's always going to be broken. But what we long for is this sense of, can we enjoy each other without shaming or feeling ashamed? Can there be that oneness that the Bible seems to point to? Dan Allender and Trempa Longman say, the desire to be captured by delight is one of the most lovely and holy desires of the heart. So the Song of Solomon talks about the necessity in lovemaking of good communication. Now, that's absent from porn sex. You don't need to communicate. But in real, between two people, you need to be creative in the way you talk to each other, in the way you romance each other. You need to use your imagination in godly ways to imagine think about your lover and how you might express your love in poetry or song or just in your actions of caring for them, washing the dishes and the ordinary things of life that you know that may take some burden off them. And then having knowledge of them, understanding them, knowing this person that you will never know completely this side of glory. They are a mystery. We are all somewhat of a mystery to each other. And then the physical communication of learning how best to do these things. Now, we may think this is just a natural physical reaction, and it is, but some of us are bent and broken by previous experience that we don't know how to do this well. And so it's something we need to learn, to delight in pleasure and sensuality and eroticism, which is what the Song of Songs is talking about, allowing yourself to feel these emotions. Now, if you've come from a background where sex has been something that has been frightening, where you've experienced abuse, all of this is going to be a whole lot more complex. If you've used pornography, it's going to be a whole lot more complex because you have a lot of images and messages in your brain that are all wrong. So there's a lot of relearning that needs to be done. You need to learn to dance in the way God intended you to dance. So the Song of Solomon actually talks about the reality of the struggle. There are a few little hints that talk about the little foxes that come in and make life complicated for people. And also you remember the warnings of not awakening love until the right time. So the Song of Songs, I think, it's not in detail. And the way that we who work in sex therapy talk about it is there's a lot of common grace wisdom that is learned outside the Bible, just from life experience and from research, that we can learn how we can help people better. So women and men tend to have very different difficulties in this area. Most men and women find it difficult to find energy for sex if you're living a very busy life and you have lots of children running around, or even two or three children running around. But feeling sexual desire, reaching orgasm, these are the ones for women particularly, becoming sexually aroused. 12% of women experience pain nearly every time having intercourse. 25% no sexual difficulty. Now contrast this with the men in a moment. This is a lot of people's experience. Why is it so difficult? Men have a whole different set of problems. They may ejaculate too quickly, maintaining an erection for a few people, but 50% have no difficulty, whereas the women, it's 25%. Have no difficulty. But notice the difference in the nature of the problems. This is a caricature of the difference between men and women, and I said beware of caricatures earlier on. But there is a lot of truth, because in the research on the differences between men and women, female sexuality is less understood and is more complex than male sexuality. And one of the things we have learned is that in men, well, male arousal is obviously very obvious and visible and tangible and conscious. Female arousal is not so visible or felt, and it's not so linked with the conscious object of arousal. So for women, they very often, it's much more of a choice. I am going to allow myself to be involved with my husband and make love, even though I don't feel like it right now. But as you make that choice, then the desire and the arousal may come, and you may feel it then in your body. For a man, it's just all go from the very moment. He knows it and he wants it. That's what this, I think, expresses somewhat well. So there's this theme of understanding and enjoying and redeeming the differences between men and women. We're all made in the image of God, male and female. The gifts of the Spirit are for both sexes, So don't think that that gentleness and kindness are female virtues, they're male virtues as well. But there is a danger too of caricatures, what's been called neurosexism, like this. This is all men are interested in, this is all women are interested in. But that is a real distortion, and we need to be careful to work against those sorts of caricatures. But so there is a lot of overlap here between maleness and femaleness, and some women have a high sex drive, some men have a low sex drive. That's not the typical way it is, but that happens. So there is a lot of overlap in this. Now, to understand the differences a little more, men tend to desire sex, think about sex more than women do, and so a generality. So to understand the differences is really important, and to understand the differences in terms of arousal, of timing, and of mood. Men can have sex just whatever mood they're in, whether they're depressed or angry or anxious. Much harder for women to do that. For men, it is a sort of form of tension release. Women need more time to be aroused, to be stimulated, than men do. So a man can perform within just a few minutes. A woman might take 15 to 30 minutes to get to a point of arousal and orgasm. So these differences need to be respected, and in terms of premarital counseling, of education of young people about sex, these are important things that they should know. And then the frequency of orgasm in women, very different from men. So men, most of the time, most men will reach orgasm on intercourse. About over 90% will. For women, you can see here that it's always 25%, half the time, 15%. So it's a very different story for men and women. Now, it varies after the age of 40, when male hormones begin to fall off, and the testosterone gets a little less, the drive is a little less, and for many men it's a relief because they're not always thinking about sex when they reach that age, and not always tempted so much after that age. But there are sexual problems, and there are good sexual counseling, good marriage counseling, can do a lot to help couples in this area. So people may not enjoy lovemaking or be able to have intercourse, and there are problems at the level of desire, of arousal, and of orgasm. And they overlap in terms of their causes. And I don't want to get... Unfortunately, this gets into long sort of clinical lists of the causes, so I'm just going to summarize some of these things. I may give you the list on the slide, but so there may be loss of desire, inability to get aroused. There may be difficulty for men getting erect. There may be pain on intercourse. As we've seen, that's not an uncommon thing for women. And there may be difficulty having an orgasm. So as a counselor, as a pastor, many pastors do premarital counseling. And I think it's very important that they have good resources on sexuality to give to people to read, but also that they're not embarrassed to talk to people about sexuality. And that's something you learn over the years. You know, you get less embarrassed about using words like penis and vagina when you're talking to people in counseling, and it becomes a very natural thing to do. But people are embarrassed, and people who come to you for counseling, so you have to do it sensitively. But to ask good questions about the family, about relationships, about what was your parents' attitude to sex? Did they ever talk about it, mention it? Were they embarrassed, angry, ashamed? What is your sexual knowledge and experience? As Dan Allender puts it very bluntly when he is talking about sex, he says, what has been the story of your penis? What has been the story of your vagina, of your breasts? And for many people, there is a deep story of pain, of trauma, of discomfort, of shame. Now, you're not going to put it that bluntly when you're asking someone in premarital counseling, but it just sort of it highlights the drama of understanding the story of your body and how you have been affected by that. What's your sexual knowledge and experience? What do you understand of the expectations of the differences between men and women? What is your communication style about relationships, about making love? Now, this may be in relation to a couple who are married already. How do you talk about sex? Can you talk about sex? Or are you just expecting the other to read your mind? And then a lot of people need education because they've had such bad education from porn and from other forms of media. So just briefly here, loss of sexual interest, a common and increasingly common problem, I think, especially with the epidemic of pornography, that men and women are finding it harder to be interested in sex with real people because their brains have been so conditioned to this instant sex that they're getting online out of the context of relationship. So you can talk about the causes of difficulty or less reduced arousal. And in this list here, you can see a number of different ones that may affect, you may say, oh yeah, that rings a bell with me. That's been happening in our marriage. And obviously, different problems at different ages will occur. And then current life circumstances. If someone is very stressed at work, then they're not going to be particularly interested. At least women particularly will not be interested in sex. Men may want more sex just out of anxiety and stress, or they may not be interested at all. You know, once you've had a child, then your energy and your preoccupation is elsewhere. So the mother is not going to be particularly interested in sex, and that makes it difficult for the husband. So they have to find a way to communicate about this and to help each other. And the more children you have, the less time, the less interest you have in sex, because you're so preoccupied and your body has been changing shape and your whole self-image is thrown out. And then past experiences, as I've implied, with past relationships, attitudes of parents. Did you grow up feeling a lot of shame about sex? Your body image, experience of sexual abuse, and maybe some struggles with same-sex attraction or gender confusion and questions about identity. And then relationship problems. You know, if the relationship is intimidating and hostile and threatening, that's obviously not going to help the sexual relationship. If there are affairs, if there's pornography, if there is a lack of self-care, if one person doesn't really know how to take care of their body well. And then problems of different expectations and fantasies, and that is the huge problem because many men have a huge image library in their heads of what sex could be or should be. And then questions of the problems of orgasm. Erectile disorder in men, and we talk now about PIED, porn-induced erectile dysfunction. There's a big number of TED Talks that you can look up online, men saying why they gave up pornography because they couldn't get an erection after a while with a real woman. Physical illness, performance anxiety, delayed ejaculation. You can see some of the reasons for that there. And then premature ejaculation. Again, another result of pornography, where you don't learn to slow down and you don't learn self-control. So there are principal boundaries, I think, and I mentioned some of these in the last section, that I think we that sort of arise out of biblical wisdom and common grace wisdom of no sex outside marriage, sexual imagination within the biblical boundaries, no pornography. I think anal sex is something that is very frequently depicted on in pornography, and it and the medical world tends to see this as an unhealthy practice. If you look up the Mayo Clinic, for example, they don't see this as a good, healthy practice at all. That's not what the anus is for. And it often causes tears. It may make people more vulnerable to infection. And when you look at studies of whether people like it, the men like it, but the women certainly do not. And then, no, I've mentioned no bondage, domination, sadism or masochism, and always safe, consensual, and caring. So I think in helping people with problems like this, the first thing is to sit down with someone and gain an understanding of what the real problem is. So that means listening to story, listening to them, asking good questions. And then they may need help with education, talking about sex. And this is where we come back. We've got to talk about these things. We can't ignore it. If we want our couples in the church to have good marriages, then we need to have a place where they can come and feel free and not ashamed to talk about these sorts of problems. So the more the leadership talks openly, the easier it is for other people to communicate about it. And there are specific solutions for the sort of problems that I've mentioned here. And then teaching this broader biblical perspective of a better story, recommending good books, referring for counseling if necessary. And here are a couple of books that I certainly have used a lot and found very helpful. The first one especially has troubleshooting chapters. So if someone can't reach an orgasm, a woman can't reach an orgasm, there are various exercises to help to achieve that, or if there's pain on intercourse. So it's a very useful reference book for both counselors and pastors. So here are a few practical ways, I think, of enhancing and helping each other and beginning to live out that better story that we've been trying to communicate to you.